It was August 21st, 1920 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. White taxicab driver Homanita picked up two men and a woman outside of the Tulsa Hotel with a destination for Red Fork, Oklahoma, a town about 3 miles north of Tulsa. As they got closer to Red Fork, one of the men beat Homanita with the barrel of his revolver. The gang then dragged Homanita into the back seat of their car and the assailants started driving. Homanita begged them to take the car and the money, but as the gang got to Red Fork, they shot him in the stomach. They then kicked him out of the car and left him for dead. As luck would have it though, he didn't die, and he was able to crawl to a garage station where he was rushed to the hospital. The next day, a man by the name of Roy Belton caught a bus from Tulsa to Nautauqua. During the ride, he read a newspaper article aloud about the hijacking and bragged that he knew the woman involved and even discussed the crime. When they reached the town of Nautauqua, the bus driver called the police and the man was promptly arrested. Homanita then identified him as the shooter with Belton, insisting that he had an alibi and he was with a woman by the name of Marie Harmon. The police also spoke to Harmon and she confessed that she was in Homanita's cab with Belton and another man. The next day, Roy Belton confessed. All of these events were front page news, and Belton was locked up at the top of the local jail over the courthouse. He was assured that he would not be subjected to mob violence, but Sheriff James Woodley heard that if Homanita were to die, a mob would overrun the courthouse. So he ordered armed guards to protect Belton. As fate would have it, though, Homanita would die that Saturday. And the next morning, Ray Belton was arraigned in court and pled not guilty to murder charges. That evening, a small group of armed men quietly gathered and drove to the courthouse. The group entered the courthouse and confronted Sheriff Woodley at gunpoint and demanded Belton. The group then disarmed Woodley, pushed him up the stairs, and demanded he instruct his guards to release Belton. The mob rushed Belton out of the courthouse where Belton was placed in Homanita's now stolen cab and drove him 9 miles outside of Tulsa. As men prepared to lynch Belton, they asked if he had any last words, and he simply stated, "I'm innocent." See, the African-American population of Tulsa took notice of this. If the Tulsa police couldn't protect a white man from a very public lynching, black prisoners would never be safe in their custody. Welcome. This is One Mike Black History. I'm your host, Country Boy, and this is the story of Black Wall Street. If you like stories like this, you can find more stories like this at onemikehistory.com. Also, if you'd like to support the channel, you can do so on my Buy Me Coffee or my Patreon page in the description below. Also, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and support the YouTube channel. But without further ado, let's get started. Tulsa, Oklahoma was first settled in 1836 by the Creek Native Americans, and they called the village Lacapoca, or Place of Turtles, near the Arkansas River. The first white settlers arrived around the 1880s, and they would name the area Tulsa Town. At the time, there was little more than a trading post for local farmers. By the turn of the century, though, it was mostly a cow town, which was a town where thousands of cattle were driven through the center of the town. Main Street had no sidewalks, street lights, or sewer service. It smelled like livestock because of all the pigs and cattle, and rain barrels caused millions of mosquitoes to breed. By 1905, Tulsa had phone service but no phone book. And when the Robinson Hotel was built in 1904, Tulsa had no sewer system, and its sewage ran into an open ditch into the street. Things started to change for Tulsa about 1901 with the first major oil discovery in Red Fork. Newspapers would call it the Great Oil Strike and spoke about how the oil strike brought oil workers and investors to the area. See, at the time, people avoided Tulsa because of the expense of crossing the Arkansas River. So city officials wanted to build a bridge across the Arkansas River, but they couldn't get the bond passed. So 3 private investors raised $50,000 so they could build a bridge with a toll crossing. This allowed goods and workers to flow from Red Fork into Tulsa. Building the bridge across the Arkansas River was the first major challenge for Tulsa. The second was connecting Tulsa to the railroad network that ran through Oklahoma. In 1901, the Katy Railroad announced plans to complete a line from Muskogee to Pawhuska. The new line would meet about 7 miles east of Tulsa. Tulsa leaders decided to approach the Katy Railroad executives with their own survey and insisted that the line run through Tulsa because it would be shorter and less expensive. To help persuade the executives, city officials pledged to secure right-of-way rights and give them a bonus about $12,000, which is $240,000 today. 3 years later, city officials enlisted the same strategy for the Midline Valley Railroad and convinced officials with a $15,000 bonus. Lastly, they convinced the Santa Fe Railroad to redirect its tracks through Tulsa without even having to give them a financial bonus. Coaxing these railroads to Tulsa secured the city's future as an oil distributor point for the rest of the Southwest. And as new and larger oil fields erupted in Oklahoma, Tulsa attracted financiers who bankrolled those oil digs and the field workers, as well as accommodations for those field workers. With these accomplishments, by 1911, Tulsa was the oil capital of the world. As a result, Tulsa exploded in growth. From 1907 to 1910, its population grew from 7,000 to 18,000. From 1910 to 1920, it quadrupled from 18,000 to 72,000. Tulsa struggled with the influx of new workers. Builders worked day and night to build Tulsa's infrastructure. It wasn't until 1910 that Tulsa even had paved streets. City officials enjoyed the wealth and influx of new residents, and with money came vices. The hotels that ran along the railroad tracks attracted gamblers who set up rooms. It had prostitutes who solicited patrons by tapping on their windows, and the whiskey flowed into the city from boats across the Arkansas River. During this time, nothing could derail the boom years in Tulsa. Looked over in all of this excitement was the growing community of Black people north of the railroad tracks in Tulsa. Black Tulsans were relegated to the fringe of society and often ignored. But Black people had been in Tulsa for almost 80 years. The first African Americans came to Tulsa, Oklahoma Indian Territory in 1830. The slaves to the five major tribes in the area, the Creek, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Cherokees, and the Seminoles. See, with the expansion of white settlements into the Southeast, this led to the passage of the Indian Removal Act. From 1830 to 1892, the United States forcibly removed all of the Eastern tribes west of the Mississippi into Indian Territory, which would become Oklahoma. After the Emancipation Proclamation, the treatment of newly freed Blacks varied from tribe to tribe. The Choctaw and the Chickasaw were reluctant to admit the end of slavery, but the Creeks and the Seminoles had already began intermarrying with slaves and quickly adopted them into their tribes. This integration with Native Americans was inviting to African Americans in the South, who were accosted, segregated, and lynched. These attacks created a separatist movement with the idea of finding a safe haven where Blacks could live freely and work. By 1890, African Americans set their sights on Oklahoma Territory because it offered a warm climate and a tolerant Native American population. The area soon became a beacon for Black nationalism and talk of an all-Black state. By the 1890s, Oklahoma Territory offered more racial equality than any other place in either the North or the South. This caused an influx of African Americans into the territories that coincided with the land runs of 1889 and 1903. This influx stirred the fears in white homesteaders who were mostly from southern states with Jim Crow laws. One homesteader warned of racial violence would erupt if Blacks tried to assert their political rights within Oklahoma, stating that dead niggers make good fertilizer. Additionally, Black homesteaders simply couldn't afford a long journey into the territories. So by 1900, whites outnumbered Blacks by more than 10-1 in Oklahoma Territory, and any hope of racial tolerance was completely broken with Oklahoma statehood in 1907. See, the Negro question had been a big issue for both parties. The Democrats would appeal to white supremacy and led their party to sweep the election of delegates to the state constitutional convention in 1906. New state leaders felt that the entire nation was watching the newest state and to see how they handled the Negro problem. So the state legislature convened in an emergency legislative session on December 2nd, 1907 to pass legislation requiring separate railroad coaches, waiting rooms for people of African descent. It was the first bill ever passed by the state. And they also passed laws making marriage between a racist punishable by a felony of up to 5 years in prison. And in 1910, passed a constitutional amendment denying the right to vote to anyone who was not eligible before January 1st, 1866. And no African American would serve on Oklahoma legislature from 1910 to 1964. In the years following Oklahoma statehood, Black Tulsa's population still boomed as the racial atmosphere in Tulsa completely deteriorated. The oil discovery had transformed Greenwood just as it had done the rest of Tulsa. Greenwood was created in 1906 by one of Tulsa's earliest Black pioneers, J.B. Stratford and O.W. Gurley. Stratford was born into slavery in Kentucky and was named J.B. after John the Baptist. J.B. would receive his education from Overland College and Indiana Law School, and by the time he got married, he decided he didn't want to work for anyone but himself. In 1899, Stratford moved to Tulsa because he had heard about economic opportunities for Negroes. O.W. Gurley came from Arkansas to Oklahoma in 1889 during the land rush. He was a black educator and an entrepreneur and gained his wealth speculating on land. At the turn of the century, the city was not completely racially segregated. There were several Negro businesses downtown, but J.B. Stratford believed that blacks had their best chance of success by pooling together their resources and working together and supporting each other in business. So he and O.W. Gurley bought large tracts of real estate north of the Frisco tracks, surveyed them, plotted the blocks into streets, and sold the areas only to African Americans, and with that, Black Wall Street was born. Greenwood was named after Greenwood, Mississippi. The first store was a grocery store on the corner of Archer and Greenwood Avenue. The community continued to grow along Archer Street and attracted real estate developers, a dentist, a black physician, and even ministers. Little by little, Stratford's dream of a black business district took shape along Archer Street. In 1905, the first school for black children opened at a Baptist church, and by the time Oklahoma was a state, Greenwood had two physicians, a newspaper, and three black grocers. In 1909, the Greenwood area was annexed into Tulsa, Oklahoma. During this time, between 1910 and 1920, the black Tulsan population surged from 2,000 to 8,800. This growth was only slightly larger than the white population, and the blacks represented about 13% of Tulsa's total population. Oil flowed into Greenwood, and while blacks were excluded from working in the oil fields, they benefited indirectly from high-paying domestic service jobs. Wages for domestic service jobs in Greenwood were unheard of in the rest of the South. A maid could receive $20 to $25 a week. Chauffeurs, gardeners earned $15 to $20, and porters and shoeshine could earn up to $10 a day. Black domestic workers accounted for 40% of the black male employees and 93% of all the black female employees and 62% of all employees. Greenwood's crown jewel stood at 301 North Greenwood. It was the Stratford Hotel, and it opened June 1st, 1918. J.B. Stratford was already rich. He owned 15 rental properties, 16 brick apartment buildings, and he earned more than $500 a month from his rental income and other sources. He was making about 10 times what the average black person made per month. But J.B. Stratford wanted a marvel in Greenwood so that black travelers did not have to settle for inferior accommodations while they were in Tulsa. The final cost of the hotel cost $50,000, which is $900,000 in today's money. Because of this, J.B. Stratford became the richest black man in Tulsa, and at the time that the Stratford Hotel was built, it was the largest structure owned and operated by a black person anywhere in the United States. With all the money that was flowing into Greenwood, once again, the vices flourished. Whites came to Greenwood to gamble, drink, and pursue other illicit pleasures within their borders. Gamblers played a game known as the policy wheel, which involved three drawings a day, and the operator of the wheel hired porters, janitors, and domestic servants to sell chances to white patrons for 5 cents. A winner could pocket $9. The salesman would then earn $2 to $3 a day, and the operator would clear as much as $20 to $30. Prostitution and bootlegging and narcotics were also scattered throughout the district, and violence was not uncommon, but violence wasn't uncommon in all of Tulsa. Greenwood also had dance halls that played jazz, which at the time was a uniquely black vice. The improvisational style alarmed the white Tulsans, which preferred the blacks to be docile and quiet and denounced jazz as jungle music. All of these things caused white leaders to start to rally against Greenwood as a criminal cesspool, even though many white Tulsans crossed into Greenwood for their vices, but the perception that Greenwood was a haven for sin helped them rationalize their fear for many white Tulsans. This growth of Greenwood, Oklahoma frightened white Tulsans because Greenwood had a population larger than many towns within Oklahoma. The Tulsa Democrat would state that Tulsa appears to be losing its prestige as the whitest town in Oklahoma. So in 1916, the city of Tulsa passed an ordinance that forbade people from either race from residing on a block where 3/4 or more of the residents were of another race. The law simply put the status quo down on paper, but it also made segregation mandatory instead of voluntary. This segregation, though, had many benefits because black merchants had a captive audience for their goods and services. $1 in Greenwood changed hands almost 16 times within Greenwood itself. While Greenwood was socially and physically segregated, it remained closely tied economically to white Tulsa. As racial tensions in Tulsa mirrored those in the rest of the South, May 31st, it rained heavily that morning. The city's oil industry was again in the middle of a collapse. 1 year earlier, oil had soared for $3 a barrel, and now it has sunk to just $1. Unemployment was as high as 60% in Oklahoma's oil industry. Later that day, temperatures spiked to 90 degrees, and Tulsa was on edge. So when Dick Rowland walked into the Drexel building of 319 South Main and walked into that elevator, he stumbled into American history. Thank you. This has been One Mic History. If you like stories like this, you can find more stories like this at onemichistory.com. Also, if you want to support the channel, you can do so on my Buy Me Coffee on my Patreon page in the description below. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and support the YouTube channel. Peace.